Kristen, we're back for another one. It's going to be fun, right?
It is.
But we have a guest today. He's actually, I'm going to call him a friend, and somebody I've known for quite some time, and his name is Dr. David Bleiweiss. And he was actually introduced to me by Mark Hyman. So I told you this before, but Mark was shocked that I didn't know David Bleiweiss. He said, you live in Florida and you don't know David Bleiweiss? So I came to meet you and the rest is history.
That's right.
I want to talk about something specific today, though, because, you know, one of the kind of peeves that I've always had is people want a supplement to work.
Of course. That's why you take it.
But it's not, is it? Because people are used to this idea of, you know, you take an aspirin and your headache goes away.
Right.
You take a stimulant and you're racing.
Right.
Supplements don't really work that way, do they?
No, and I think that we're changing the verbiage. I don't really call them supplements anymore. I call them targeted nutrients, targeted nutrition.
Is that nutraceuticals? Is it the same thing?
Nutraceuticals. Yeah, okay. And you can't expect them to work like a drug or an over-the-counter drug or prescription.
But people do, right?
They do. They say, you know, I took that vitamin D, and I didn't feel anything.
Well, I'm going to tell you that several years ago, there was a man named Michael Ellis who ran a methamphetamine lab, and he went to jail.
Good.
He got out of jail.
Yes.
And at that time, the bodybuilding community had learned that if you put together ephedrine, caffeine,
yes,
and aspirin, yeah, it has what they would call a thermogenic effect. So he put them together because we can get herbal forms of ephedrine, right, in the form of mahuang or ephedra, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Caffeine from kola nut or green tea,
right,
and aspirin, white willow bark.
Yes.
And he created a product that was sold in kiosks in the shopping malls. It's called Metabolife. And it was a weight loss product.
It just sped you up.
It's a legal way of selling the raw material from which they make methamphetamine. Right. But people would buy it to lose weight. And what do you think would happen when they would take it?
They would lose weight.
And they would feel incredible because they're on speed.
Right.
What do you think would happen when they stop taking it?
They would feel just the opposite.
Because it's addictive. So if you want to make $1 million and you don't want to do it illegally, then you sell addictive compounds that make you feel bad when you stop taking them.
Like opiates.
So I think that started this idea that supplements work because bodybuilders were then buying ephedrine and caffeine compounds under all different names.
It
was Ripped Fuel and Herbal Fuel.
Yeah.
And they felt it. And now that's evolved into what they call pre-workout drinks. They have nitric oxide drinks. And they make you feel up.
Right.
But when it comes to the most important supplements, my opinion, you're not going to feel them.
You're not supposed to feel them. If you're taking targeted nutrient for a condition, say congestive heart disease, then you're going to breathe better. You're not going to be short of breath. You won't have swollen ankles. You'll see the targeted nutrients working for the condition you're taking. If you're taking certain supplements, certain nutrients to heal the lining of your gut, and you have ulcerative colitis, you're going to feel better. You're not going to have as many trips to the bathroom that may be bloody. If you have chronic fatigue and you're taking mitochondrial nutrients to help rebuild your mitochondria, then you're going to have a little bit more energy. So I don't know if it's correct to say that people don't feel anything with them. I think they don't feel anything if they're taking them singularly, because things do work together, like B vitamins. And again, if you take vitamin D separately, you're not really going to feel anything. Your immune system may be a little bit stronger, so you won't get flu as much. You'll have decreased risk for multiple sclerosis, but you can't quantify that to people. Well, if you take your vitamin D, you'll have decreased risk of diabetes, multiple sclerosis. Your immune system will be stronger. Your heart will be stronger. That's great. That's in the future. But what about now? I need something for right now. And that's why we take drugs.
Do you think that it's possible that you could get all of your nutrients from your diet? Oftentimes people will say to me, well, I'm just going to eat healthy and I'll get all the nutrients I need.
Well, that's the question. because 150, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, you could make that statement and everything was organic at that point, and you everything that was in the soil went up through the plants into the animal, if you're eating animals, or into the plants, and you ate them and you got your critical antioxidants and everything you needed. We didn't have the level of stress that we have today. So we're all under more stress, so we need more antioxidants. We need a little bit of help all the way down the line, a touch of something. You're in Florida. When's the last time you baked in the sun? Or if you went out in the sun, didn't you not have your SPF 500 or SPF 50? So you're not allowing the sun to make the cholesterol in your skin go into your bloodstream as vitamin D and be converted in the liver and the kidney for the vitamin D we need. What is it, 85% of us are deficient in vitamin D? And close
to that.
In Florida. In Florida. Right. So it's one of those fantastic five supplements that we were mentioning that
Well, I that think you would take. Before you get into that, because we had a brief conversation this morning, and I said what I'd like to talk about is the five most important supplements or the ones that people need the right. most. And, you know, clearly there's a discussion because there's not really five and we eliminate all the others. But people are looking to know, what should I invest my money in? What should I buy if I can only afford, you know, five supplements? We'll talk about that. But I think there's an important distinction between eating for survival and eating for optimal health. So can we get everything from food in terms of survival? Well, sure. But is our health compromised? In most cases, I'd say by the time somebody gets to 60 years old, or maybe 40 years old, if they're not either eating optimally or supplementing, there's probably going to be some kind of compromise, don't you think?
There is, and there has to be some kind of wearing down. You know, if we all live forever, there wouldn't be room for the next generation. So as we age, and again, the companies that say we're reversing your age, age retardation, age slowing, healthful aging, appropriate aging, things that you can be Prince Philip, who's 98 years old and still has all his marbles. And I have people who are 60 that don't have their marbles. Digestive enzymes. Once you hit 60 years old, you're not going to be making the level of hydrochloric acid in your stomach to begin the digestive processes. So it won't trigger your pancreas to make the pancreatic enzymes that you need. And it just goes all down the line. And you need, I would think, I take digestive enzymes.
Before I share what I said the top five supplements are, I want to ask Kristen, how often do people come up to you, and I kind of know the answer to this, and try to get you to buy into their supplements because they're somehow magical?
Yeah, you know, this happens quite a bit where people will present and say that, you know, they've got the next magic vitamin they want me to try. You've got to take this pill for the morning, this one midday, and this seven pills, which is really going to be for your brain health. Next thing you know, you're spending a small fortune. And what I oftentimes find is that I'm spending a small fortune, which is going down the toilet in neon yellow. So it's not, you know, even if I'm taking these vitamins, they're not really getting used by my body. They're just circulating right through. So, you know, I've always kind of practiced mindful vitamin taking. But then more recently, I've gotten into using transdermal vitamins. So I'm actually wearing mine right now, a transdermal patch. And because it's slow releasing throughout the day, I find that I'm not urinating my vitamins into the toilet and, you know, just kind of getting this gradual release. Now, when I take vitamins, do I notice a huge difference? Am I all of a sudden squatting huge amounts that I wasn't able to squat before, or pressing, or, you know, doing faster jumping jacks? Not necessarily, but it's subtle. You know, my gut health feels
a little better.
My brain fog isn't, you
as
know,
bad.
An issue. Yeah.
Did you say less bloody trips to the bathroom? Because now I got like psycho in my head. Like, what goes on in your bathroom?
No, that's for people with Crohn's or ulcerative colitis.
Okay.
Less bloody trips. Okay. But again, your vitamins are going to wind up in the toilet anyway.
Yes.
Right? That's where they're supposed to wind up. Mm-hmm. So when we had the docs would say, well, vitamins are just, you know, you're going to enrich your pee and it's going to, well, you're going to do that with your drugs too. If it's appropriate and you're being metabolized out through your body, it's going to wind up in your toilet one way, solid or liquid. Mm-hmm. And neon yellow, it's riboflavin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
I take mine twice a day.
Here are the top five. So you're neon yellow? I mean, you're peeing neon yellow?
Neon yellow and with a slight toxic smell because I take the alpha lipoic acid.
Why does asparagus make your pee smell funny?
Oh, well, my pee isn't that humorous, but you know what? I used to know the answer to that because, yeah, actually, every time you eat asparagus, your kidneys say thank you.
Really?
It is. It's a wonderful tonic for your kidneys.
Huh. So that's their way of saying
thank you.
Is they make your pee smell.
That's right.
Okay. So there's actually a gene as to whether or not you can smell asparagus pee. So if you think that your pee doesn't smell funny when you eat asparagus, it's just because you can't smell
it. Smell it.
Somebody else would think it would smell.
Is that true?
That's 100% true.
Wow. It's funny. Yesterday, I didn't know if I took my vitamins, right? And last night, I go to the bathroom and I pee. And it's like, oh, I did take it. I forgot if I took it. And I had to see if the smell came out.
I know. And yesterday, I forgot if I ate asparagus. And sure enough
yeah. You do that.
So, you got the gene.
I said to you today on the phone, my top five, based on all the people that I've worked with in terms of what do I believe has the most far-reaching benefit, I have to start with probiotics.
Okay.
I would add to that enzymes.
Okay.
I would also say NAC, which we can talk about. And then the next two that I'm going to mention are really categorical. So a lot falls under these headings. But one would be anti-inflammatory, and the other would be antioxidant. And I think, you know, if you're going to have a checklist, that would be mine.
I take those every day. I take my curcumin twice a day as an anti-inflammatory mm-hmm. for joint issues, also to keep my brain from being inflamed. I take my vitamin D every day. Haven't had a cold in a very long time. I just saw a patient, older woman, osteoporosis. No doctor had taken a vitamin D level, and she was at like 12. You know, and it goes 30 to 100.
When you say older, where's older?
74.
Okay.
Everybody's older.
Well, I'm curious. The vitamin D thing is interesting. I'm
200 genes. It affects 200 genes, vitamin D. And it's not really a vitamin. It's made in your skin, goes into your bloodstream, gets converted, and goes elsewhere in your body. So by definition, it's a hormone. So we call it vitamin D, but it's truly a hormone and a critical one.
And commonly, when people have chronic disease, they also have low levels of vitamin D.
Yes.
So here's what I wonder. Does that indicate that low vitamin D levels contribute to chronic disease or vice versa? Does chronic disease result in low vitamin D levels? And does that mean that orally taking vitamin D is going to help?
I think that orally taking vitamin D is going to help. We don't get enough from the sun. I had a 72-year-old patient. He used to go to Holover Beach every weekend. Naked, and his vitamin D level for a weekend of complete full body sunshine was 48, which is sufficient. It's not where I'd like it to be in 60-65 range, but he was generally healthy, tan, and he made his vitamin D from his skin. I think it's critical for immune system, for not having issues with blood sugar.
Do you have to be naked in the sun?
Well, you could wear something to cover yourself up and be a little bit private there.
Okay.
But, it was David Perlmutter was on Today Show, I believe.
Naked?
No. actually, I just spoke to him today for the conference coming up. But he said something on camera, and he said, so what would happen if we went out into Times Square right now and we took off all our clothes, other than being arrested? We would make 10,000, 20,000 units of vitamin D if we were out there for a half an hour. And I try to get, I'm not very tan, but I try to get the 9:30 to 10 o'clock in the morning sunshine, like the models do on South Beach.
So, that's why you go.
Da-dum-dum. But yeah, I take my vitamin D every day. I take my CoQ10. I take my digestive enzymes, and I take my NAC with vitamin C and alpha-lipoate so that I can make glutathione.
Right. And, you know, I learned a lot about glutathione when I was really struggling with mold toxicity.
I remember.
Because, I mean, you've helped me with this a lot, but I would get intravenous glutathione.
Yep.
But eating glutathione at that time didn't result in intracellular shifts in glutathione, which is why NAC, which is a precursor, is the vehicle by which you can increase your intracellular.
And we use NAC in the ER when you have overdose of Tylenol. Or you've had a few drinks and you take extra strength.
Acetylcysteine,
NAC. But I like to recirculate it, help the glutathione by giving the alpha lipoic acid and the vitamin C with it.
So,
or eat broccoli sprouts every day. Highest natural source of glutathione. That's your takeaway.
Are there certain vitamins you would recommend, kind of depending on a lifestyle? Like if somebody went out drinking, that night, is there something you would recommend?
You spoke to that patient? Yes, I recommend that they take their N-acetylcysteine before they go out, and they take their magnesium, and I make sure they eat a little something before they go out.
Mm-hmm. She's talking about after the fact.
Yeah. I'd still take N-acetylcysteine.
So when you get home from the bar and you're about to go to bed.
Yeah. You're taking 1,200 milligrams of N-acetylcysteine.
Charcoal?
Charcoal? No, I think it's a little too late for charcoal. If you don't want to get
Kristen,
really
do you have plans tonight? Is that what you're getting at?
Take peanut oil or take olive oil before you go out drinking. You won't get as drunk. It'll coat your stomach.
All right, so...
Look, little tricks of the trade. Mm-hmm.
If you can, just briefly, just explain to people who may not know why glutathione is so important.
Glutathione is the master antioxidant of the body. And we're finding every few months something brand new about it. I found that intravenous glutathione and orally taking the pre-glutathione supplements was helping people with colitis even. And it was keeping them clean and it was getting rid of their mercury because it will bind mercury out of you. And, I have people who are eating sushi two or three times a week and they love their tuna. And I'm looking at their circulating mercury levels of, 40, 50, and which doesn't show what's in your tissue. The test that insurance pays for is a circulating red blood cell heavy metals. That's not in your tissues. That's only good for, depending on who you believe when you read it, 30 or 40 days in your bloodstream, lead and cadmium and mercury. We'll do a provocative urine challenge to see what's coming out from your tissues. But glutathione is number one. It's critical. Intravenously, I did, David Perlmutter had given, I guess, 3 grams was his treatment for people who were coming in with Parkinson's disease. And they could be dancing for 2 days without Parkinson's disease because of the glutathione helping their brain.
So how often would you recommend somebody who's suffering from a chronic disease get an IV of glutathione?
At least weekly.
And that brings
us... if you've got mold and other issues, we'll give it to you 2 or 3 times a week.
That brings us to another important topic, is I mentioned that I would get a glutathione push. I would get it intravenously.
Yeah, right.
And I still do that before I travel. And again, I don't feel anything positive, but the times I don't take it, I feel beat up when I come home.
Yeah, a little bit less. Yeah.
So it makes a difference. But talk a little bit, because I know IVs are becoming very popular, and we offer in our facility IVs, but can you talk about, we're talking about supplements, meaning oral supplements.
Right, which is dependent on your digestive ability, dependent if you're able to metabolize it, and what you do when you excrete it. If you're getting it intravenously, we are not worried about a first-pass phenomena in through your stomach and through your liver, that it's going right into your bloodstream into where you need it to be. Plus, you can get markedly higher doses. I can only take probably 8 to 10 grams of vitamin C over a day before I get a...
gastric distress.
Bowel flush.
Okay.
Right? But I can take 50 grams of intravenous vitamin C if I'm getting sick. We give 50 to 100 grams for people, and we build them up to that level if they have breast cancer and other cancers, if they're using the vitamin C for that. You can get so much more intravenously without gastric side effects and recognize that you'll get what you're putting into you, other than I take 4 pills and I'm only getting 30% of everything together because I don't digest it well and I don't absorb it well, and I take other supplements or I'm on medication that makes my metabolism and excretion of it much faster.
As we wrap it up, and I certainly want to have you back, but I want to just point something out, because you were a pharmacist. And I think this is really important for people to understand.
I was a clinical hospital pharmacist, yeah.
So you started in pharmacy, and at a certain point, you kind of got the sense that drugs are not the answer? Is that what kind of got you?
Yeah, when the pendulum swung back. We forget that the stronger the drug is, the stronger the side effect. Because the drug's targeting your nucleus. It's getting in. It's affecting the proteins. It's going right to the core. It's like you're riding a bicycle and you get rid of one spoke. Well, you'll still be able to ride the bicycle for a little bit. But after a while, the other spokes are going to come out. And that's what I find works with strong medication. And you see the commercials. I got sick the other night. I'm watching CBS with Nora O'Donnell, right? And there were 7 commercials for everybody who had colitis and depression and anxiety and diabetes and cancer and, you know, a pain over here and a pain up here. And then you listen to the side effects that they actually put on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Nausea, vomiting, death. Right. It's like, okay, ask my doctor if this is right for me.
Yeah.
I would rather avoid those things, and that's what we do in a functional medicine practice, is going upstream to see why you have something and work on that so that you don't have the downstream.
So from a pharmacological practice, you went into medicine and became an MD, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then I
taught pharmacology. I was the teaching assistant for the medical school.
But I believe that you were again disillusioned, because now you get into this world of allopathic medicine, working the insurance model. And you reached another point of frustration, right?
Frustration. It was, no one's listening to anybody. We have 20 minutes to a half an hour with a new patient. I take 2 hours now and give a comprehensive history and comprehensive physical. But there are, you know, we're not alternative medical physicians. Alternative is I'm using ephedra versus an inhaler to bronchodilate you. That's an alternative. We're not doing that. We're looking to target why you have things going on with you, whether it's stress or it's toxins, allergens, nutrient deficiency, hormone imbalancing, and then working on that. We don't fix people overnight. It's going to happen in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, when people will wake up in the
morning. When you say we, so when you became disillusioned with conventional medicine.
Well, I became disillusioned because I got screwed with conventional medicine.
But then you went on to develop an expertise in functional medicine,
right?
Correct?
Right.
And now you teach that.
I got off the sofa from chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and it took about 12 weeks, and then I went on my new way.
Well, and I just think it's important to point that out, because you're the doctor.
And I was the patient. I was the victim.
And you're also talking about intravenous vitamin C. I mean, there are people out there who would call that quackery. They go, need drugs.
They call that quackery in that, where was it? It was in Georgia. Patient was dying from sepsis. Mm-hmm. Nothing worked. And they told the wife, that's it, and it's going to be gone by the morning. Somehow they forced the administrator with a potential lawsuit to try intravenous vitamin C. Guy woke up the next day. There was no issue. Because now we know that intravenous vitamin C will help if you have sepsis. What is it, 100,000 people or more a year die from sepsis and we don't recognize it?
And the final point I want to make, and I'm going to ask you to echo it, is you spoke about the drugs having a rebound or a side effect.
Mm-hmm.
You're not seeing that with the nutritional supplements in most cases.
You're not. You know, how many people died last year from nutritional supplements? Zero. How many people died from the appropriately prescribed medication written by their doctors? 98 to 100,000. So, third leading cause of death, prescription drugs and medical care.
And you said appropriately.
Appropriately prescribed, right.
Right. You're not talking about people who are buying stuff out of the trunk of somebody's car.
No. And that's a lot of the opioid epidemic. It wasn't. It may have started with the prescription because you had your teeth out or you had your knee surgery. But at that point, when you're not getting it anymore legally, appropriately, people are buying it.
I'm curious, and this is for another podcast, but do you see the desperation in the pain field? Do you see people coming to you?
No, I don't see chronic pain.
You don't see patients intentionally?
I don't see patients, yes. Right.
But they're out there. And it's a problem.
And they're hidden. And they're addicts. And our lives are being affected by them when they go to work or when they don't go to work.
Right. So you're hands off. You don't want anything to do with that market.
That's correct.
Okay. So you're getting people well.
Getting people well slowly but surely, right? Rabbit in the hair. It takes a little while. One day you wake up, you go, oh, God, I don't have this anymore. Geez, I feel great. Or I slept well, or I'm having bowel movements. Or, geez, I have energy. Or people tell me my skin looks better, right? From whatever we're doing.
The rabbit is the hair, by the way. It's the
tortoise. Oh, I'm sorry. The tortoise, the hair and the tortoise. That's right.
Dr. Bleibeis, it's a pleasure, man. I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you,
and
Phil.
And we're going to do this again.
Okay,
Kristen,
great.
Anything you want to say in wrapping this up? I told you he was a good guest.
He's amazing. I love it. It's great to see a practitioner actually helping to get people well. Thank you
That's
for your services.
My pleasure.
And on that note, we'll be back with another one very, very soon.